Do what thou wilt should be the whole of the law. Welcome to the Thelema Coast to Coast Keith 418 Lecture on Goetia Outtake. The following is 32 minutes from the end of the lecture in which Keith 418 gives some practical advice on working with the Goetia and also a Q&A session. I hope you enjoy this exclusive Thelema Coast to Coast download. Love is the law. Love under will.
Well, since I've got some extra time, I wanted to talk about some more practical issues. Let's say you're on board and you decide, yes, Keith, I want to use the Goetia. What do I need to start thinking about? First, you need to have a time to do it. You need time before the ritual operation to prepare. You need time during the operation to do it. And you need time after, both for your psychic come-down experience and also to write up the operation and clean up. If you don't have the time to do this and really have the time in your life to do it where you can dedicate to it, don't do it. You know, a lot of people will say things to me like, I can't take off of work, I have other commitments, blah, blah, blah. Don't do it. Don't rush through it. It's not something you can rush. It's not something you should try to do most of the time spontaneously until you have a lot of experience under your belt. There are times, very few of them, usually because of contingency problems with other people that you're working with, that you may decide to do a spontaneous working. Unless you have all your stuff set up and unless you're really geared towards that, it's a bad idea. You need some time to plan it. Time is also important as far as starting your operation. It's not so important in terms of finishing it, but you need to start your operation at specific times, I think basically due to the government of hours. Back when I was starting with this, I would set up a government of hours by going to the chronicle, figuring out when dawn was, when the sun set, calculating the total number of minutes in the day, dividing that by 12, and setting up a government of hours based on that, and the same with night. You guys don't have to do that. You can go to Google. You can type in government of hours. It will spit out a government of hours for you that you can print out and then use. But if you're dealing with a goetic spirit that is solar, you would want to start at dawn on Sunday. You'd only want to work the Goetia when the moon is waxing, in other words, getting stronger and not waning. I am not an astrologer. I do not pretend to be one. Astrology does not figure a lot in my magic. I have been criticized by this by countless people, some of whom I really respect. It's a weakness of mine. But I will say I have tried to do goetic magic when the moon is not getting stronger, and it has not been as successful. If I wait until the moon is waxing, it works better. And I think a lot of this has to do with just it's easier astrally to see this stuff going on when the moon is waxing. That's just my opinion. That's been my experience. Test it if you want to yourself. But you really need to have a lot of time for your operation. The second thing is space. You need a large enough room plus privacy and non-interruptions. That means no phone, no pets, no friends, nothing. If you can't set up a space like that, don't do it. Remember, you know, preparing a room and we were just absolutely excluding everything. Disconnecting phone lines, disconnecting everything, setting up guards if we needed to. I had people who were very thuggish who would hang around and just like, you know, keep people from bothering us while we were doing it. You need that. Doing goetic operations at night tends to cut down on those interruptions because very few people are going to be bothering you at 3 in the morning, at least if you're a certain age. I guess people in their early 20s sometimes have people coming by at 3 in the morning, but generally that's not an issue. However, that cuts into problems because of your sleep and everything else. If you can't afford to make those sacrifices, don't do goetic magic. The next thing I kind of wanted to talk about was picking a demon. Pick a demon that looks like, if you're starting out, can help you with a project that you're working on. I know people who have a really bad attitude, I think, with the demons, where they call them up and don't ask them to do anything. This is really serious. It's really stupid because they think that if they just look at them, it's going to be safer than putting them to work. Now, if I go down to Home Depot and put a whole bunch of day laborers in my car and bring them back to my house and don't tell them to do anything, they will find things to do around my house, I think. I'm not sure, but it's not something I'm really going to risk. Likewise, I had a roommate in college named Mike, who's now a fairly famous mid-level author, whose mom was the mother of 12 kids. Mike was the youngest. and they had a huge house in Buffalo. And his mother was in the habit of just calling from the bottom of the house. Her name was Marge. Michael! And he would run down the stairs of this huge house to the kitchen and say, "Mom, what is it? I just wanted to know where you were." And he hated that. It drove him crazy. I see people treating the demons like that. You know, they call up this demon. "Well, why am I here? I just wanted to look at you." That's stupid. But people do that because they think it's ethically safer than actually putting them to work. The next thing I wanted to talk about was seals. People bewilder me by not using any seals at all when they do goetic magic, but even worse, they use paper seals. Use the metals they tell you to in the Goetia. People say, "Well, how do you do that with gold?" Well, you can get a gold coin and beat it with a hammer because gold is malleable. And if you'll see here, this is a goetic seal for Belial. And it's inscribed with an engraving tool on a pounded out gold coin. And we have more pure gold than they had, more access to pure gold than they had in the Renaissance and in the Middle Ages. So we have better opportunities to really use great metals. You can get copper really easily. All of the metals that are in the Goetia are fairly easy to obtain. Make the effort. Make really beautiful seals. Why? Because you can reuse them, for one thing. This seal I can keep using forever. People say, well, what's an engraving tool? You can get those at jewelry, stores that help people make jewelry, or you can go online and order it. Use Google. Type in engraving tool, see what you get. This is not rocket science. But putting the effort into making this stuff really pays off. One of the first operations I did with a real gold seal like this, I saw the effect of it. I was amazed. It's having one of these in your hand is sort of like having one of those planes, those toy planes that have a tether on them. You know what I'm talking about? They're not remote control planes. They're sort of like a half step towards one of those. And you feel the power of the entity on the other end just like that if you have a real serious metal. So make the investment. Don't be cheap. That's really my major philosophy in working with the Goetia. Do what you need to do the instructions exactly the way they tell you. Buy what you need to. Don't whine about it. I know people are going to hear this and say, "Oh, but that stuff is expensive." Yeah, it is. If you don't have the money and you can't afford it, don't do it. It's just that simple. It's the same thing with the altar, with the circle, with robes. Put the energy into it. Make the stuff really nice. Now, at this point, one of the things I kind of wanted to talk about was, a lot of people have this attitude that if you do magic like this with just one or two other people, you're crazy. But if you do magic like this with a lot of people and you call it community theater, then you're okay. And there's a tendency in the occult community, especially in the OTO, to turn everything into a theater project. And I think there's a number of factors contributing to this because people feel it's safer. They feel that if I spend huge amounts of money and have rituals that no one sees, alone in my house with maybe one or two other people at the most, there's some problem with that. But if I do it as a huge event with lots of people and sort of put on a show, then that's somehow okay. And they deal with the sort of transgressive attitude of ceremonial magic by trying to turn it into theater. Resist that urge. Too many cooks spoil the broth. The maximum number of people that I think you should have at any goetic operation are three. Three is too many. Two is better. And the more people you bring in, the more chaos and craziness is going to result. And if you can't do it with just two people, don't do it at all. The third person can be there to take notes. That's often really helpful. Who are the personnel? The person who invokes is kind of like the traffic manager at the airport. They're doing flight control. They bring in the demon. The scryer or the seer, what are they doing? They're looking at it. And if you're doing the scrying, you don't really want to have too much responsibility to do anything else other than just look at it. You don't want to talk to it. You don't want to be responsible for opening and closing the various invocations or rituals. You just want to concentrate all of your energy on being the person who looks at it. A lot of times, scrying is kind of like being the guy on Star Trek with a red uniform. Because he's there to show everyone how the monster works, right? And it can be trying. So if you are doing the conjuring, be careful of your scryer's mental well-being and sort of be protective towards them. Stop kind of pushing them out of the spaceship to go look at what's going on. And just, you know, I've had people just be like, okay, Keith, we can do another hour. Come on. Tell us what it looks like. This is awful. And you know, if you're really greedy and you're trying to get the most out of the operation you can wind up burning through scryers pretty quickly. So be patient with the person who's doing that. I ask you, I entreat you. Again, the most important thing I think to do when approaching goetic magic like this is to be really prepared. The more work you put into preparing for it, the better off you are. Have all of your equipment together so that you won't have to leave the circle. That means if you have to go to the bathroom, a tank for that, all of your incense, all of your fire, all of your books, all of your stuff, and it should be big enough so that you can move around with two people fairly comfortably. This is not that hard to do. The other thing that I sort of began as a kind of innovation myself was to come up with interview questions ahead of time. If you watch The Daily Show, Jon Stewart sits there with a whole bunch of questions for each guest. If he runs out of things to say, he looks down at the questions and has another question ready. Oftentimes, people are so blown away by the arrival of the spirit that they just, every thought goes out of their head. Now, this thing arises that they didn't expect to see. It's there in their room. They're totally blown away by it, and they're sort of stammering. And then if you have your questions already prepared, you can go, okay, here's our next question. Thank you for coming. What about this? And you can go back to that. If you don't have that preparation ahead of time, you're going to be in trouble. People often ask me, well, what do we do when the spirit arises? What do we do when we see it? Well, what does Crowley tell us to do when we see the spirit?
Challenge.
Well, he doesn't say that first, Marlene. He says we should greet it with something.
Right.
What do we greet it with?
Do what thou wilt,
shall be the whole of the law. Right. And this is interesting because then you can see what response the spirit gives you. But this sets up some interesting implications. Do we recognize that the goetic spirits have themselves wills of their own? If we say that to it sincerely, then we do. So then people ask me, well, then is it okay to boss them around? Well, it depends. In certain instances, that may be what you want to do, but it might be better to find out whether the will of the spirit is cognate with what you want to do. And if it's the will of the spirit to help you, and it's your will to do this, then you may be able to work out an arrangement. And recently somebody critiqued this as saying it was a little too middle class and contractual oriented, where, you know, you're extending this idea of equality, blah, blah, blah. That may be a very good critique of what I'm telling you. I certainly accept that possibility. I personally don't like to boss people around that don't want to be in the environment that they're in. I mean, this is just my own experience. If you come to work for me and you don't want to be there, I don't want you as an employee, no matter what your skills are. You are a drag. It's not any fun. Go home. You know, and I have told this to people. On the other hand, the spirit is there and it has an agenda. I would much rather want to see if its agenda and my agenda can mesh. And I think that's really the new paradigm of using Philema with goetic spirits, that we're not treating them like these evil demons that we can boss around because we're good Christians and we believe in Jesus and they don't. But more that we respect them on their plane, we ask them to respect us, and we see whether or not we have things we can work on together. And I've always had a lot of luck with that. I mean, I don't really feel like it's been a bad system for me. And I would ask people to consider it just sort of as an operating technique. Now, a lot of that comes back to keeping the moral high ground. In the past, you know, you look at what constrains the demons. In the old system, you would see Christian names. You would see, you know, I constrain you by the gods of Judeo-Christianity, by those saints and those spirits and those forces. And Crowley has changed the Goetia in the new aeon to reflect the metaphysical entities that govern our arrangements. So the question then becomes, if you're not really committed to Crowley's metaphysical system, can you use those entities to boss the demons around, control and constrain them, or even create an environment where you can work together? The Goetia is important because it tests that. And that test sort of goes on every possible level. If you're not fully committed to the system that you are using, the Goetia will find ways around that. It's like if you're an employee and you find out your boss really doesn't want to do what the company wants him to do, you will discover that faster than anyone else as you're working closely with them. So that's really what I've got in terms of that sort of stage. Are there any questions?
Lots of questions.
Okay, but thank you at least for this part, and maybe we can talk informally after that. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. So did people enjoy that? Was that?
Yeah.
Great.
It's very useful information.
I actually said a few things that makes me not quite so against those silly little Goetic people.
Well, you know, again, it's to me.
Well, the whole thing that you brought up about, you know, it's like aligning the will and seeing if there is a commonality there is really good.
But you want to do that with every system.
Well, I know, but you know, I'm one of those silly little girls that always met these really nasty Goetic people like you, and you know, they like boss everything around.
Right. Well, there is that level of command which, you know, I play with a lot because I wonder sometimes, you know, is it thelemic to be bossing people around, or is it thelemic to not boss people around? And at what point do you have the right to boss, and at what point don't you, and who gets to be bossed, and how, and how does that all work out? And that's a big part of Goetic magic, and that's actually what you work out in the course of it.
Well, and one question would be, are these spirits kings or slaves?
Right.
And, you know, that kind of relates back in the traditional magical way of looking at things. You know, the Hermetic view was man is a microcosm and the demon is just this thing.
Right.
Therefore, we have the right to boss it around.
Right.
It doesn't have the kind of completeness that we
right.
do.
Right.
So therefore, you can boss it.
You could boss it around. But again,
whereas in the Lehman model, I would say if its nature is to serve, then
right.
tell them what to do.
But I like to think about who has the right to boss me around and who doesn't, and who is a good boss for me and who isn't.
Oh,
and
sure.
In the reality that we live in, most of us have a boss. You know, I don't work for myself. If I was working for clients, I would still be like independent. I would still be in some way bound to them. Mm-hmm. And I have bosses that I really respect and will work hard for, even if I don't like them.
Yeah.
Which is always interesting to me. Or I'll have bosses that I like a lot as human beings and think that they're perfectly nice, but I know are terrible bosses.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that really play out in terms of magic?
And it must have something to do also, though, with their natural tendencies and what they're good at doing. You wouldn't want to go and boss a dyad to start a fire.
Right. That would be pointless.
To what extent are they discerning with respect to accomplishing whatever your goal is? Specifically, you know, if you know, you have some goal that's partially based on some illusion in your mind, you know, say with example, you know, the direction of an organization, you know, that you want to support, and you know, you have a partially illusory vision of what that is. I mean, are they just going to like mindlessly?
Well, it depends. I mean, like Crowley says, we shouldn't like take what they say seriously, and he's like, don't. I mean, see, part of what I wanted to warn people about is there are people in an area in the country who communicate with me from time to time who do Goetic magic, and they're very into it, and they have a particular Goetic entity that they're in constant contact with. And when I talk to them about it, I'm like, great, that's terrific, I do this sort of thing too. What do you ask it to do? And they're like, oh, we just summon it and then we worship it. Right, but see, the problem is, though, is I understood that because I don't know any Goetic magician who hasn't started on some level worshiping the demons that they create, and I'm just as guilty of it.
What do you mean by that exactly?
Well, okay, let's just say, for the sake of argument, that we were to come over here one night and we were to totally do this amazing, just, you know, you and me, Chris, this totally kick-ass Goetic operation with fantastic ropes, fantastic equipment that we put a lot of energy and money into and set up the time and alienated our spouses and we just go ahead and did this whole thing. And we were sitting here doing this, right? And in the course of it, you saw a transcendental entity appear in the room that you could look at, and when you turned away and looked back, it was like television that was on. and it was showing you things and doing things, and like maybe there was noises going off in the room, or thunder appeared outside and started clashing when it said things. Chances are, and I'm just speaking for myself, I would be like, holy shit, right? I mean, it's like, that is not the average everyday experience. And the immediate sort of thing is to be in awe and just be like, okay, it's just enough that you are here,
right?
Because this is like totally freaking me out, right?
Wait, where's my list of questions?
Right, and you're like, you know, fumbling around with your stuff, and you're just shaking, you know, because this thing is like suddenly turned up, and you're like, shit, this is not pretend, this is not a game. When I turn away from it and turn back, it's still there, you know?
Right.
I mean, and to me, it's like, yeah, you tend to have this kind of like, I cannot believe this, right? And you just want to hang out with it. You know, like, oh, yeah, I had something about my car. Forget that. Look, just, like, hang out with us, right? You know, like, fuck all that shit. Like, wow, you know? And that's really what I think happens. And you have to fight against that. And part of coming up with goals and plans is, like, cool as you are, neat as you are, unbelievably outrageous as this experience is.
So glad you're here.
But we actually have this list of stuff we want you to do. And that's tough. I mean, that's tough to do.
Now, what about the seminar that we went to a couple of months ago, where another one of these brothers were talking about... So these brothers were talking about, you know, how they had established these relationships, and intermittently throughout the course of their, you know, sort of quote-unquote normal day, all of a sudden, X pops up, and you know they're you know in the middle of some problem.
They're familiar
with, No, not familiars. No, they're in the problem. They're in the middle of some problem with work or
right.
a social problem or whatever. And all
right.
of a sudden, bang! Here's so and so saying, "I'd love to help."
Well, I mean, you know, the success is your proof. I mean, if these people are doing like amazing stuff and have insights that no one else has and are just like, you know, doing great things, you know, hats off to them. Maybe I could learn, you know, from talking to them. My feeling is that when you start to have communication with them outside of the ceremonial environment, you're asking yourself for problem, for trouble. Because I do not want my day interrupted by goetic spirits of any kind. I mean, I don't want to be sitting watching TV with my wife, oh, this is really funny, and then suddenly have something come up and go,
right.
It's like I do ceremonial magic to keep it in that sort of environment. And the temptation of everybody is to just sort of let it all lapse and have it intermingle. And I just think you start doing that, you're babbling on the street like 2 months later. Like,
right. And to just another question then, you know, one of the things that was mentioned in that lecture was, particularly with respect to one of the brothers, was that, you know, such and such spirits asked for these little minor accommodations or sacrifices, whatever. Like, for example, the brother had to throw a chocolate bar in a body of water to
right,
get
right.
such and such
yeah.
spirit to
they
do.
Ask you, they ask you to do stuff like that all the time.
Whatever. I mean, at what point, you know, obviously, you know, blood or whatever. And, you know, at what point do you draw the line?
Well, we negotiate. But I knew I wasn't going to get what I wanted. If I didn't do that, and I was content with saying, okay, I can't do that.
But see, that's critical, though. You knew how far you would go.
Yeah, I knew how far I would go. But, you know, we all have our price. I mean, you know, most of the stuff that they wanted, I had no problem doing. But, again, every single thing I gave them in this area helped me in some other situation later. Not out of I gave it to them and they helped me, but the act of doing it showed me things I needed to learn.
Mm-hmm.
So even if, you know, the end result wasn't that great, I mean, we did animal sacrifice, live animal sacrifice, and that helped me with a whole bunch of other problems in magic that I was don't look immediately related to it, but were very important. So I never had any problem with anything like that. But yeah, you know, we all have a line. And again, I mean, part of, to me, those sorts of issues can degenerate into what I warned about, which is the endless minutiae of the astral plane, which you have to keep in line. You have to keep your eye on the prize and make sure that you're not getting distracted into endless mush. So focusing on the tangible issues tends to me, kind of prevent that from happening. Is the box of books in the room where I wanted it to be? Yes or no? Yeah, okay, it's there, fine. It's not, no, I'm not going to concentrate on all this other crap. It's just...
How long do you usually allot to go at working? So does it depend upon what you're planning? I mean, this is a critical question because...
6 hours.
Okay.
Is generally my, I would start the operation, and none of the ones we ever did went more than 6 hours. Okay. But that time can go by like that.
Yeah. So
you start at 6 in the morning.
Yeah.
But yeah, six hours.
Okay.
4 hours, 5 hours isn't unusual. 6 is the outer limit.
Okay.
But
that's
it's never quick. And the people who think they can do them really quick like this...
You can't do it in an hour and get out and go to the
No, mission. Very, very rarely. And the other thing is the come-down period. And if you do a lot of magic, you have to work on that come-down period where you're like, I can't, you know... And one of the things, one of my teachers...
Making big decisions in that first half hour.
Well, or just realize that you have to set time up to come down off of it. And this one teacher that I had always said, go to see a movie if you're having issues. You know, if you're having problems distancing yourself, just go to like see some, you know, what was the Red Crimson? That's
Crimson Tide,
or what was that movie about the submarine with Baldwin or something? You know, he was like, go see the submarine movie, you know, and you'll feel better. And I have used that as a technique, and it is effective. Good to see some mindless movie, and you sort of like can decompress.
Yeah, so to occupy your forebrain.
Right, but you have to set up space for that, and that's the thing I think a lot of people get into problems with, because they don't set up that. They don't set up the prep time, they don't set up enough time to do it, and they don't set up the downtime.
Well, let me ask you, you know, you vote, they appear, you request, they say no. And, you know, then there's all this other business.
I've never had that be an issue. Here's the thing. People often say you have to test the demons. And the more preparation work you do ahead of time, the less you have to worry about that. I'm not saying don't do it. Do it. Don't not do it. And be polite about it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so somebody shows up and you're like, look, you know, we're not trying to be rude here, but we have to do this.
Your name is Charles.
Your name, how do we do this? And you just write it down. And your attitude is always scientific. It's like, well, this thing may be what it's saying it is. It may not be. We're going to just take out the information and evaluate it later.
Right.
But I've never had... I found that the more work I do and the more time I put into things like the sigils and all the rest of that stuff, the easier the actual work is. Because when it shows up, it's like all that stuff is done. The struggle that I think people go through happens because they don't do the prep work.
Well, let me ask you this. How real is it, you know, this hierarchical business of, you know, king, prince, president?
It's an interesting issue. And a lot of it also comes down to servitors. You may find yourself working with servitors, and that's not as bad as it sounds. Because if the servitor can do what you want it to do better than the creature can that you're going for originally, we got fobbed off on a servitor once when I contacted Baal. And I opened the first Enochian heir, Lil. And we called up Baal. And we got fobbed off really quickly onto a servitor spirit. And it was okay, because I saw the train of people going up to the king. And I was like, this guy that we've got is as good as we're going to get at this point. He's fine for us. And if you call, like, Barbara Lee's office, who's our representative here, to have a problem with your Social Security fixed, Barbara Lee is not going to answer the phone. I mean, 99% of the time, she will not pick it up. You may get lucky once, and she might, but most of the time, she won't. And the staff person who takes your call is going to resolve your problem faster for you than Barbara Lee does, because Barbara Lee does not know how to fix Social Security problems. She has staff people who know how to fix it. The demon you're talking to may have a servitor who can get it done much faster than, because the demon king is somebody that's just, you can't talk to. I mean, there's a reason David Jones is taking 2 dead languages. Because the creatures he wants to talk to
speak those languages,
right? And if you don't speak them yourself, you're going to wind up dealing with new servitors who know English. This is my theory.
Yeah.
But that's not, I mean, he's not taking that just to be a wise ass. He's taking, there's a method to that madness, so.
Okay, so you did it. You brought up that Enochian word along with the Goish.
Yeah, I did. We opened the first aid door, and that was also what tended to make the work we did drag out, because we'd pile a lot of Goetia, a lot of Enochian stuff up ahead, do that, then do an Goetic spirit, then close out the Goetic spirit, close out all the Enochian stuff, and shut down. And my methodology tended to use Pyramidos as an opening of the temple. We would open and then close with Pyramidos. And we got to a point where we would open Pyramidos, banish, purify, invoke, open Tuat, do the ritual, close Tuat, close Pyramidos, and we'd be out. So I would put Tuat inside Pyramidos as a technique.
Not just preparing the gigos and gadgetry for doing the actual Goetia, but part of your preparation for your Goetic workings was setting the stage astrally, so to speak, by doing Pyramidos and doing the Enochian air that you felt would best reflect.
Right, and we would do a series of the keys. We would run a series of the keys. And I would actually recommend using some of the keys just for beginners in the Goetia, because they tend to charge up the atmosphere quicker, open the temple up, and get it going. And so, like, you know, doing the first and second key, that's right. You can't go wrong, and then start the invocation. The thing I would really caution people about just is don't banish all the time when you're done. You know, it's like, to me, it's like building this amazing painting, you know, and painting it, and then at the end of it, just taking all the paint away.
It's throwing turpentine on it.
Right, that's not what you want to do. And people are so paranoid about this stuff that they just want to banish all the time. And you know, slowing down the banishing is really the urge to banish.
I think what it is that thing that you're talking about. People are not used to the fact that serious magical workings requires hours to get back into your regular normal. Reality,
or some sleep.
Or some sleep, well, which would be hours.
Right, right. But it
or a movie, which would be hours.
Right, which would be hours, yeah. You need some time to...
And so they do these banishing to instantly try to reclaim something that they're familiar with.
You're correct.
But what that does, of course, is it disrupts the ripples you've just set in motion.
Right, the other thing, too, is that people really love being actually drunk, and they confuse that with gnosis and magic, and we see this in the OTO all the time. I mean, there's people whose, as Craig has pointed out, there's people whose entire, life's goal is to be actually drunk 24/7, and that's initiation to them. They are then the masters if they are, like, totally actually plastered all the time. And, in fact, that's really, I think, where people tend to start losing it, is just that, lack of control and lack of...